This is tape two of the Dr. Wendell Westcott interview. When the last tape ended, you were talking about the concerts today and the fact that you're playing still at 90 years old.
Uh-huh. I say that because they had a big, can you see that thing on the wall?
Governor certificate.
Signed by the
representative.
Governor. Uh-huh. And our representative and senator. It was a big surprise. I went in on my birthday to play my regular Sunday program, opened the door, my God, here was a room full of people with that. Uh-huh. And I hardly could hear what was being said because I was about to go up and play my regular Sunday program. Uh-huh. And so I was very pleased to have that. And I have a letter, another booklet, or yes. Well, we're on being taped.
Mm-hmm.
Peter McPherson, and yes, you know who our TIAA,
mm-hmm.
John Biggs is the CEO.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Clifton Horton was, I know.
So,
you have a whole scrapbook.
Scrapbook. That was in the State Journal.
Uh-huh.
And so forth. So, that's another memento I've treasured very highly.
Mm-hmm. What are some of your favorite pieces that you play?
That's hard to say because it's in the dozens. I will say this, though. From my experience over the years, I'm playing not to enhance my artistic stature, but to be a part of a university scene, of why the tower is there, why the bells are there, a musical instrument is there. It's to really reach the audience who I want to listen to it. I'm really, neglected to say, am carrying on a tradition that has five centuries of history in the lowlands of Europe. There they have as many carolers in Belgium, in tiny Holland, as we do in this great big country. Each one has as many carolers. That has been a 500-year-old institution of providing music for the people, which basically are hymn tunes, folk music. I should have said folk tunes first, hymn
mm-hmm.
tunes. As a sideline, a few compositions that the Kiner writes to have a little variety to satisfy his own musical taste, because he's probably the organist in the church down below. And so the carillon as an instrument to play for concerts started, I'm giving a little more history, digressing, started in the 1890s in Mechelen, Belgium, the place where there's the school where I studied, by Jeff Denine. To have formal concerts that an audience would come to as you come to an indoor concert. Never before in the 500-year-old history had there been formal concerts with an audience of, say, 50, 100, or 500 people there, maybe a couple of dozen, maybe nobody. It just was sounding, and you could hear it. It was in the town square, and so you could hear it all around, and it was just informal playing. For the first time in the 500-year-old history of the carillon, Jeff Denine, because he had improved the instrument vastly from previous, instituted formal concerts. They had special trains from other countries that came to those. It was such a special event that special trains were made to bring in audiences. So that was the beginning of the idea of the carillon as a concert instrument. Was back in the 1890s, Jeff Denine improving the instrument so that it was a better musical instrument than previously, and introducing. So when it has come to this country, the idea of concerts has dominated more than just the idea of background. Well, I did both. I played at 8 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, 5 days a week, that's 10 times. Actually, I was playing more times than any other choir in the world. Also on Sunday, the Sunday afternoon concert, also for all of the football games, for special events such as the May Morning Sing, and whenever there was some special thing. I played for dozens of groups from, let's say, what do you call them, school,
school assemblies? Or
no, where they come is a word. When a group of students from Grand Rapids, from all over Michigan.
Okay.
The field trips.
Field trips.
Field trips.
All right.
And they would hear me play, and then come up to the playing chamber, and I'd talk a bit about it. Take them up to the belfry. Now you can't do it. The way it's, the bells are ringed, you can't get up to the belfry anymore. At least the public can. Mm-hmm. And so I always had tours to the belfry after all of the summer concerts. Very often, three different tours. I could only get 25 people up there at one time. I might have three tours, which means 75 people. So now that is one feature you can't do. Well, as I say, the carillon is traditionally for just background thing. We were doing, I was doing both that. I had my formal concerts in the summertime, a Sunday afternoon. I had the informal plays, 8 o'clock and 5 o'clock, which was just atmosphere while they were going at the end of the day. I think more appreciated the 8 o'clock time. I have letters, believe it or not, from the official board about that fact. So that it became a part of the campus, and now it's no more. Mm-hmm. Well, what do we have now? At 12 o'clock, we have an automatic thing playing a tune, single notes. At 5 o'clock, automatic playing a tune lasting a minute. I don't think I want to have that, my feelings on that too widely dissembled, but personally to me, for a fine carillon, to have the only official playing those twice a day tunes, all right? The unofficial playing, when the students get a piece good enough to play, they go up there and play it.
Mm-hmm. Or, so there are some MSU students that go up there?
They do. I think they do a little of their practicing up there. In fact, one tonight is, I think it's she, Sally Harwood, is playing with her teacher. She happens to be one of the lawyers for the university.
Oh.
And she apparently had a musical background, and from the little I've heard, she plays very well. Mm-hmm. So, but so far as having a resident carillonier, as we have in other areas, even in our own state, Yale has their carillonier now, Kansas had from the very beginning, Ann Arbor from the very beginning. I think any one I can think of.
Grand Valley, you said, has a
Yes, also. For, I don't know whether she plays both carillons or if there's someone else that plays the other. I don't. But the idea that we can't afford to have a player. Actually, my position was half, once the carillon got underway, no, it wasn't in the beginning, it was after some years, I don't remember, was half carillon and half teaching piano. Mm-hmm. I'm a pianist as well as organist. Mm-hmm. And I thought probably they'd do the same thing, find someone in the music department who was interested, and if they didn't want to have a full-time carillonier. But I think they don't feel that it's important enough to have a full-time carillonier.
Mm-hmm. So there's no replacement right now?
No. Other than
the students that you mentioned,
than the fellow who teaches, who labels himself MSU carillonier. Oh. Well, it's stretching the point a little bit.
not official.
He's not paid to play at all. Mm-hmm. I think he will play a concert. I think he's playing tonight with a pupil, but not on a regular basis. No, I think that. My daily playing, I can see when I started all the campus, this long before your time, was all on the north side of the river. Now, it's with all the buildings on the south side, most of the students are there. They aren't where the Carillon is. Mm-hmm. So so the morning and afternoon is less appropriate now than it was during most of my time. Mm-hmm. But five concerts that an outsider has to provide is unique. Mm-hmm. It implies that the university doesn't consider it important enough to the spirit of the university, why they had the bells in the first place, to give campus spirit, to help out the athletic department. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm also playing for the football games. I've been doing that since mm-hmm. I stated.
This is before or after the game?
I was doing it before and after, and then I now, the last year, gave up afterwards. My wife says there aren't enough people in the vicinity to warrant it. More are there before the game, uh-huh. so I play about an hour before the game.
Oh.
But yeah, I'm glad to play. The money part was never an important feature of at any time, because my salary yeah. was among the lowest of the music department. Mm-hmm. Again, a manifestation that they didn't consider the Carillon worth paying anything, really. I'd say my salary was commensurate with what I did halftime of my teaching, and mm-hmm. I actually was playing all those years gratis, if you want to get down to the mechanics of the figures.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't regret my position as chironeur has had opportunities that most have not had. My scrapbook is just full of material. And
can you think of any time, maybe either time of day, a memorable, a really memorable concert that you gave? Or something that you remember?
Yes.
What comes to mind?
Yes, I can think of one. Dr. Horton was a good friend of Duke Ellington. And when Duke Ellington died, Dr. Horton gave me a ring. Could you play a piece in memory of Duke Ellington, who has just died? Well, I didn't have a thing of Duke Ellington's in my library. I went over to a music store. My gosh, thank goodness, they had a volume of Duke Ellington pieces, maybe 25 pieces. Okay, I had a week's notice, and not only to play one Duke Ellington piece, I played a whole program of Duke Ellington. I had to arrange that whole program in 7 days' time. I was working day and night until maybe 3 o'clock in the morning. I know the last pieces. I didn't even have time to put in the major bars. Here were the notes, but I knew what I'd written. Mm-hmm. I'd just written it 24 hours earlier. But I didn't even have time to finish the manuscript. So I played a Duke Ellington program. I had one of the largest, and maybe my wife can remember, maybe it was the largest audience I ever had, but it was a large audience. Dr. Horton heard it, of course, and said, yes, I got the spirit of, in fact, he wrote it, so I had the record. I got the spirit of the things, and he enjoyed it very much and appreciated it. So when I retired, have to think. Well, now right now I'd have looked at the date and see. I think it's when I retired for the final time. Then when after the part time, I had a letter from Dr. Horton, who was then the chancellor in New York, as you would know, wishing me well. That's the only letter I had from anybody, was Dr. Horton.
When you actually
yes,
retired.
Who wasn't even around at the time.
The in looking back at your career and the Carillon itself, is there any final thoughts you want to share for the record?
Well, I suppose I'd say that I felt I had the best position on the campus. It was never work. I spent hundreds of hours, thousands of hours writing music. I've written more, far more than anyone else in the music department has ever written, because I had to write it to have a repertoire. Mm-hmm. 95% of it was arrangements of music that I chose to write. The rest were compositions, but the arrangements were far more listenable, more practical for my audience than compositions. The compositions were written because I enjoyed doing it. The satisfaction of writing music and having a place to play it. Composers will write something, they aren't performers, they have to beg someone, to some orchestra to play their piece, or some pianist or someone to play it and maybe build up their name as a composer, beg them to play. I wrote my own music and played my own music. I had it both ways. I had everything. And if I didn't like some of what I've written, I made alterations. If you could see some of my manuscript, it's all been fixed over. So a lot of them is just like a living trust we have. We've had about five different variations of it, and I'm still in the process of making a change right now on our house. Mm-hmm.
But you have a key to the orchestra door, more, yeah. more or less.
So the idea of writing music and performing it publicly before an audience, what more satisfaction could anyone have than that? So it's not only I can appreciate it, but I have an audience that's appreciated it. And to talk about a job that you don't have to work at, well, it was never work to me. The playing is not work. My God Almighty, it's your the most fun of anything you do. You talk to any performing musician, a pianist or violinist or what have you. You aren't alive unless you're performing. Our orchestral conductors, if you notice, they all live to a ripe old age, 80, 85 or so. Others don't make it. And I consider myself, I'm 90, I have to do this, the same thing the orchestra conductor does. And I consider my age at 90, I don't know how many more years, is due to being a carillonneur, having to climb 72 steps twice a day, the same distance. My studio, piano studio, I walked upstairs. It was just, I estimated the same distance that I did by stairs there. Twice a day, once to go up to teach, once to go down to get my mail and go back up. All of that going up steps, exercising with hands and feet twice a day. What better exercise? I belong to the gym. I see these people in the gym doing the different things. Boring as hell.
They're not making music.
But I have the music. My mind is on the music when I'm playing, but as an asset, I'm getting a tremendous workout of hands and feet as well. So what better job could you have than being a musician? Not only a performing musician, but a creative musician of writing music.
Mm-hmm. And the Beaumont Tower remains a symbol, even though maybe it's not the geographic center, it still is a symbolic center for the university.
It's a symbol of my life from, let's make it after the war, because it was the beginnings on two octaves, it was meager. But from 1947 onwards, things focused on the Carillon, and then when the handbells came along, which rather than one spot, we could go all over the country. And because of my unique position as a carillonneur, I don't know of any other chironeur who had handbells. Now, maybe since then there might be one somewhere, but it's not a common experience. Mm-hmm. If you're a chironeur, you aren't in a position where you can recruit the people. I think the college is about the only place where you have people old enough who can do the kind of thing that I did. Mm-hmm. So I had a combination of the chironeur and college students to draw from to do a companion thing that rather than being one spot was over the world through the BBC in London. Mm-hmm. But we gave probably about 24 concerts a year on the handbells here, plus the tour, now maybe more than that, because we were going over to the Kellogg Center 7 or 8 times a year. It was the most popular entertainment for these banquets. And as I could show you, there's legislative dinners, the state legislature several times. They had all of the, they call it booty, bags of stuff to hand out. Mm-hmm. And for their take-home mm-hmm. presents. And engineers banquet. It was just better entertainment than someone getting up and playing a piano solo or someone singing mm-hmm. or what else they do to entertain, telling jokes.
Well, I want to thank you on behalf of the project and appreciate your insights and certainly your experience and long career.
Well, you're entirely welcome. I haven't gone over this history ever, I guess, before to this degree.
I'm glad we're able to capture it on tape.
Well, I enjoyed doing it, and I hope I haven't been too illiterate in some of my comments.
Not at all. Thank you.
Yes.